Chuck and Julie, bringing you the truth straight up.
I'm Julie Hagan. I'm working at
an Emmy-winning former investigative reporter, a highly successful trial attorney, and publisher of a major Denver area newspaper. They've been partners as talk show hosts and in marriage as parents for over 10 years, providing thought-provoking information, opinion, and entertainment live, local, and interactive. Everyone's voice is always welcome on the Chuck and Julie Show.
Welcome to the Chuck and Julie Show. This obviously is not Chuck or Julie. This is Mark Poff. I'm guest hosting today for Chuck and Julie as they are watching their kid play golf, which I think is just awesome. Sounds like the kid could crush me in golf, so I'm not going to go play him for money. I'm sure Chuck and I are going to play some golf here sometime in the near future. But I always like to help out because I want them to be able to take some time off. You know, I love listening to their show. And so I want them to be able to take the time off. And so I'm going to spend the first 15, 20 minutes talking about some current events and stuff that are going on that, you know, I'm not a pundit. I'm not someone who really understands politics that much. I'm just an average retired cop, pretty conservative, living my life here in Colorado, lived here for probably 30 years now. And just kind of how I feel as what I think is an average person. But if you want to call in, remember the number is 888-627-6008. Or if you're on Zoom, feel free to unmute and just start talking and stuff. John's going to come on in about 15, 20 minutes after, and we're going to start talking about district attorneys in the state of Colorado and how that works and judges and all kinds of stuff. Now, we have to be a little careful talking about judges. I'm usually in front of a judge probably one or two times a month. And it's very interesting to go to different judges and see the different things, but we'll talk about that. First off, I want to talk about Scottie Scheffler just a little bit. You know, I think last week they dropped all the charges, and I predicted right from the beginning, you know, the same day that it happened, that they would ultimately drop the charges. And it seems like Scottie's kind of taking this with a grain of salt or whatever, saying that, hey, no harm, no foul. I'm sure they're concerned about him suing. They could also be concerned about players not wanting to go to Louisville. And understand that, you know, you have these golf tournaments everywhere, and people typically like to go to cool places like the Masters and other things like that. And I know I used to live in Columbus, Ohio, which is right outside of, Dublin's right outside of Columbus. And there was always the big tournament every year that, you know, everybody wanted to go to. What if they just don't want to go to Louisville anymore? And Louisville wants to have these tournaments, but the rumor is that the cops are heavy-handed, all kinds of stuff like that. So that could actually hurt Louisville a bunch. But one of the things that is kind of interesting is they were in such a hurry to charge Scottie on this case. I mean, the whole thing happened so fast. They arrest him. They take him to jail. They book him in, put him in a jumpsuit, which is amazing. They rush to go get him. The PGA executives go over there in their Range Rovers to the jail and pick him up and get him back in time to tee off. But whenever you do things quickly, you tend to make mistakes and you screw things up. And once that cop, Brian Gillis with Louisville PD, the detective that happened to be there and was directing traffic, got to ask, why is the detective directing traffic? Once he booked him in, you're pretty much locked in at that point. You can't just say, oh, no harm, no foul. We're just going to make everything go away. Because in law enforcement, when you charge someone with a felony, you can't just make that go away. You have to go through the district attorney's office. And that's what took some time. And Louisville PD has announced that they have started an investigation. They're in the midst of an investigation over these cops. And the main thing about this is they didn't turn their body cams on. And that's the requirement now. I can't really speak to body cams because I basically retired before body cams were mandated. So I don't know the experience as a detective or as a street cop having to put one on. They're actually kind of cool. They use magnets So you have this metal shield underneath that protects you. And then the body cams have magnets and they stick on the outside. So if somebody knocks it, you know, it just knocks away. But they didn't turn them on. And what's interesting is who was really pushing to have people turn their body cam, you know, have body cams, turn on body cams. You know, it's the federal government was a big pusher of this back during all the riots that we had a few years ago over the Rod or Floyd. So I find it interesting to kind of twist this into current events. So the AG's office, Garland, they don't want to release the video of their interview with President Biden. They say, look, the transcripts are good enough. Now, I will tell you, having read transcripts and having seen body cams, you know how they say a picture is worth 1,000 words? Well, how much is a video worth then? Because, you know, look at the other day, you could have read an article yesterday that said President Biden during a event on the South Lawn or whatever, just stood there while everybody else danced. But you really couldn't get the sense of what they were expressing in that text, you know, when they just say Biden was standing there while everybody else was dancing. But when you see that video of Biden just like kind of, you know, he's like in the freaking Twilight Zone. So the video is huge. So why is it that the individuals, all these attorney generals and the federal attorney general, who's pushing body cams on all these street cops so you can have transparency from our law enforcement to show what is going on? Why is it the federal government is the one who doesn't want to be transparent, doesn't want to release videos, doesn't want to see your president on video? You know, because transcripts, I'm telling you, you know, I've testified so many times and I said, you know, I saw this person testify. When you read the transcripts, you just don't get the jive of how this went down unless you were able to see a video or listen to an audio tape. So I just find it so interesting that the individuals pushing for all this transparency, they don't do it. The FBI still doesn't record a lot of stuff, you know? So it's kind of like, do as I say, not as I do. And I would love to see that Biden video. I have to tell you, you know, I feel like I'm someone who watches NASCAR for the crashes, and I'm not. I don't watch NASCAR. But every time you see Biden go down a set of stairs, you're just like, you cringe. It's like, man, is he going to go down? Is this the one, you know, where he's going to crash? And, you know, you can't help yourself. You don't want him to get hurt or anything. But you can't just, you know, laugh. I laughed my butt off when I saw Biden standing there like a freaking zombie. You know, while everybody else is dancing, you know, it was amazing. And I just heard today, current events, that Biden, after he gets back from this G7, G9, G3, whatever meeting they're having, when he gets back, he's been so busy and it's been so, you know, trying on him and everything. He's going to go to Camp David and basically prepare for a debate that's over 2 weeks away from today. So let's say he gets back on Monday. That means he's going to spend 10 days at Camp David prepping for one 90-minute debate. I've actually been in debates. I was on a school board, had people run against me, and they actually, the local community set up a debate. I might have spent a couple hours on it, but this is how I feel. It's also kind of the same as when you testify in court. It's easy to remember the truth. It takes a lot of preparation to remember the lies. And the things we've heard from Biden in the last few years are all stinking lies. You know, he makes up all this stuff saying, you just don't know how good the economy is. You really can't appreciate. Hey, look, I can appreciate every time I go to the grocery store. You know, I went to Walmart this morning. I could go to the 20 item lane. I actually counted it because the self-checkout was too full. And I was like, man, I got exactly 20. This is awesome. I'm going to go to the 20 line checkout. 90 some bucks for 20 items. I mean, that's absurd. And so, you know, that's why it takes Biden so long to prepare, is he's got to memorize all these lies. I didn't have to do that when I testified in court. I'd go in there and say, look, you know, I don't have any notes with me. Ask me questions because I'm going to tell you what I remember on what happened. You know, if you ask me dates and stuff, okay, whatever. But also, I think one of the main reasons why Biden is going to Camp David for like a week to 10 days for this, is so the guy can rest up and they can dope him up with how many B12 shots can you give the guy? You know, how well, you know, put him on oxygen for 10 days straight. I mean, he is really looking bad in the last few days. So I'm concerned that, you know, maybe they're concerned. Maybe I'm not that concerned. So they're trying to really prepare for this. And I'm still not convinced that he's not going to say at the last minute, you know what, I'm not going to debate a convicted felon. And it's like, well, hey, we're not asking you to talk to your son. We want you to talk to Trump. But, you know, there's no telling what he may bring up. But one of the things I wanted to talk about first here real quick is, you know, I've been to a lot of trials. I sat in on the whole first trial of Terry Makeda. This is Sheriff Terry Makeda down in El Paso County. This was the term limited out sheriff. Right after that, the next sheriff, the DA, and some others who I consider to be very corrupt, they trumped up these charges and tried to get him in prison. And, you know, I've been a detective for 10 years, and I'm looking over the PC affidavit and others. Well, they actually, I'm not sure there was actually an affidavit, but reading through reports and understanding exactly what happened. And I'm like, this isn't a crime. They charged him with extortion because he told every jail has to have medical personnel. And the thing is, the safety and security of a jail is the obligation and the responsibility of the county sheriff. It's his responsibility to make sure that not only all the inmates that are in a jail, all the employees, and there's probably more employees in a jail than sworn deputies in a jail at any given time. So it's his job to make sure that everything's safe, to include medical. So they normally contract it out. Probably every jail in Colorado contracts out their medical personnel. Well, there was a lot going on with medical personnel, to include medical personnel sleeping with deputies and other employees. So there's a lot of shenanigans going on in the jail. Well, the sheriff was fed up with the drama that was going on in the jail. So he went to the manager, the person in charge of this contract, and said, look, you need to clean this act up. You need to get this all cleaned up. And this one person needs to go because they're causing all kinds of problem in the jail for the safety and security. I don't want that person back in my jail. Get rid of them. According to the DA's office, that was extortion. And that's why he was charged with extortion. That's insane. That's not a crime. Does that sound familiar? Does that sound something like maybe what happened against President Trump? Is these stretching of laws, you know, extortion is a very clear law. It's been around for a long time. But if you have someone who's paying money for a contract for services and they're responsible for the safety and security of that jail, should the sheriff have the right to say, either you straighten this up, get this person out of here, or I'm going to see about canceling the contract? Here's what's so ironic. The sheriff's not in charge of that contract. It's the county commissioners. So the sheriff really couldn't have done anything. So there's no possibility of extortion. But yet the local DA charged him with extortion. So I have seen firsthand how local district attorneys, if they're corrupt, can charge, you know, that whole phrase, you know, you can indict a ham sandwich. That is so true. You can stretch, twist, change the laws, stretch the definitions. And who defines, you know, what is truly this law or not this law? It ultimately is the appellate courts. But see, the local courts don't care. So what happened with Donald Trump is you had a local judge who doesn't care that it's going to get overturned. It's going to get overturned. There's no doubt in my mind that at some point in the process, you know, an appellate court, maybe even up to the Supreme Court, they're going to throw the whole thing out, the whole conviction out. The question is, how long is that going to take? 3 to 5 years. So at the point that we go to the election, Donald Trump will be known as a convicted felon. That's all they care about. They don't care that a year or two later it's going to be overturned. And you know how I know it's going to be overturned? Go look in the media right now. All of these pundits at CNN, MSNBC, they're all saying, oh, this is a rock solid case. There's no chance of it getting overturned. As soon as I hear that, it's like, oh, this is a given. Because they're all a bunch of liars. And they're all saying this stuff because they want people to have confidence in this conviction, even though they know there's so many avenues for appellate issues. So let's talk about this local judge. And one of the things that I found to be very interesting is they talk about the fairness. You have Representative Stefanik, who I am a huge fan of hers. I think she's amazing, and she should be the next Speaker of the House, if not Vice President at some point. She's already filed a complaint in New York over the fact that you have one judge who got selected for three cases that are relative to Donald Trump, one being Donald Trump's case, and then some others that are similar or with other individuals associated with Donald Trump. So what's the odd? It's supposed to be random. And I even looked it up. In New York City, it's supposed to be random, a random draw of judges. They have 28 judges in Manhattan at the district level for felony cases. So what's the odds of one judge getting Donald Trump's case? Well, it's one out of 28. I mean, that's simple. What is it for the same judge to get all three? It's one out of 22,000. It's just astronomical odds to do that. And their rules are it has to be a random draw. So how do they do that? Well, I can tell you how they did it in El Paso County because I was in the system. I was a detective. I did arrest warrants. And then I would go. So what you would do, I'd write my arrest warrant. I'd go over to the courthouse. I'd get a judge to sign it. They usually did. I don't think I've ever had a warrant not signed by a judge. And then I don't just leave the courthouse. What do I do with that signed? I have an original arrest warrant signed by a judge and by me. It needs to be filed with the court. Well, which court? You know, you've got 20 different courts. Do I just randomly pick a judge and say, hey, do you want this? You want my case? It's not how it works. You go down to the one central location where the chief clerk of the courthouse is, and I walk in. I walk into the room, and as soon as I walk into the room, one of the clerks gets up. It's not even like the primary. It's just one of the clerks. They get up, and they say, hey, can I help you? Now, I could have a search warrant, or I could have an arrest warrant. So I tell them, I have an arrest warrant for a case. Oh, so we need to open this up in the system. This needs to go into the system. So they open the same file cabinet every time. And there's empty folders. Let's say that there's 20 district courts, numbered 1 through 20, 1 through 20, 1 through 20, 1 through 20, 1 through 20. And they're all lined up. You can see like this whole file cabinet of these empty folders, 1 through 20. So you just take the next one. Let's say it's Division 8. So they pull out and they said, oh, the next one is Division 8. That's the randomization of making sure it's a random draw when you come into a case. So that's how the system worked. There was nobody, you know, they come over and say, hey, well, let's read your case. You know, is this an interesting case? Because Judge Smith wants all the interesting cases. That's not how it works. But yet this Judge Merchant or whatever his name is, the odds of him getting three is just astronomical. So you have a whole system that you don't have confidence in, that it truly was a random draw against a judge that obviously is against Trump. So what is the difference? I see that John's already joined, so I need to kind of wrap this up. So what's the difference between the Trump case and Joe Biden? And thank goodness he was convicted. It kind of redeems my faith in the system a little bit, but understand the differences. You have a local jurisdiction in Manhattan by a DA who said, elect me and I'm going after Trump. That's so corrupt. I mean, if you had a cop who said, you know, hey, Sarge, I'm going out today and I'm looking for John Smith and I'm just going to find a crime, they'd fire you if you did that. So obviously he called his shot. He said, look, I'm going to be corrupt. So let me do this, you know, and I'm going to work the system to get Trump if you elect me. So that's what you can do in a local DA's office. And John and I are going to be talking about that here in a minute, about how local DAs can definitely be corrupt. There's no oversight on these local DAs at all, other than we're going to talk about one today and how the system works. But with Biden, with Hunter Biden, it's a federal court, whole different ballgame. Whole different game. It appears you have a judge, because she's the one that threw out, if I remember this right, she threw out, you know, that sweetheart deal that was insane. So obviously she's trying to do the right thing. Again, this is what I was talking about on Monday. The end justifies the means. So you have the local DA in Manhattan and the judge all in this scheme that the end justifies the mean. We want Donald Trump. We want to affect the election. We do not want him to be back president again. And we're willing to do whatever it takes as a Democrat from New York or a Democrat from Georgia or whatever, to do whatever we can to affect the outcome of this election. And this is how we're going to do it. They know it's going to be overturned in 2 to 3 years. They don't care. All they're trying to affect is this November. Then you have a federal judge who, oh, by the way, is actually trying to do the right thing. She's trying to do the system. So she's explaining things to the jury. She's making rulings. A judge, you should hardly ever know the name of a judge. I think the last judge who name I knew was Ito with O.J. Simpson. I mean, you shouldn't even know a judge's name. It shouldn't be that. It should be like an umpire at a baseball game. If you know an umpire's name in baseball, there's a problem. You know, if they're making bad calls constantly, that's a problem. An umpire should be like an unsung hero to keep the neutrality of the game. Same thing in a courtroom. But I have definitely seen judges who it's obvious that they have an agenda. But in this case, it's over the top. So whenever a judge makes these rulings, they're always got to be thinking, appellate issues. Am I about to make a ruling that's going to get overturned? Well, in this case, he doesn't care. He knows the stuff's going to get overturned. Doesn't matter. He's in justifies the means. Their goal is to make sure that Trump is a convicted felon on election day. That's it. And that's how they're going to get it. The scenario in Joe Biden, like I said, I feel kind of, you know, relieved from the fact that honest people from Delaware, you know, called the bullshit flag and said, look, this guy obviously committed this crime. We're going to find him guilty. I'm actually fairly confident that this judge is going to give a fair ruling. Should he go to prison for this? Probably not. I mean, he checked the wrong box on a federal form. I mean, should he go for 25 years? Absolutely not. Now, if he's doing this and checking these boxes and doing this for me legally to get a bunch of assault rifles, or of course, I know the definition, don't want to go, a bunch of weapons to go commit crimes, then maybe 25 years would make sense. But in this case, you know, if he gets probation, who cares? It's irrelevant to the system, but it is what it is. And I hope that there is the judge is trying to do the right thing. Let me see what other couple other things. No, I think I kind of covered all this. And oh, my last call, I got to do this. And then we'll bring John on and we'll talk about stuff in Colorado about a local DA. I guarantee you, I mean, I'm almost as sure of this as I am over Scotty's charges getting dropped. Joe Biden is going to pardon his kid. Don't be fooled by, you know, have you already, you know, are you going to accept the ruling? Yeah. Have you already decided not to pardon your son? Yes. That's BS. After the election, it doesn't matter. He'll come up with some excuse that, you know, somebody's targeting his kid and he's going to protect his kid after the election. If he loses, guess what? Hunter's getting a pardon. If he wins and all of a sudden, well, Hunter's getting a pardon. You know, it's going to happen because who cares? He doesn't care. The only reason that Hunter Biden may not get a pardon is because he dies before he can sign the paperwork. I mean, that's the only way. So, all right. So I've wasted enough time talking about all this other political stuff because, you know, old John, you can bring him on now. Thomas, I appreciate it. John doesn't like to talk politics and I love him for it. John's that whole belief, you don't pull someone over and say, I want to see your driver's license, registration, proof of insurance, and your voter registration card. A crime is a crime. It's kind of like the Tony Beretta, which is, you know, if don't do the crime if you can't do the time. So, John, one of the things that we found interesting, and thanks again for helping me out with this. I really appreciate it.
Welcome. Thanks for having me.
You bet. So we're going to talk a little bit about Linda Stanley. This is kind of a current event. The actual hearings are going on right now. Would you like to go through kind of her whole background with the Morphew case and just kind of just lay out the whole thing that got us to this hearing that's going on right now?
Yeah, I mean, my understanding, Mark, and please don't, quote me on everything here, but my understanding of what transpired in that was that she had worked with some local prosecutors. So she's the elected official. She oversees the judicial district out there in, I believe, Canyon City, and I'm trying to think of all the
Like four or
other.
five, I think it's four or five
Yeah.
counties.
Yeah, I think Fair Play is involved in that, but there's a number of areas to include Salida that's also under her jurisdiction. And for those of you who don't recall the Morphew case, what happened in that was the husband of Suzanne, Barry Morphew, was arrested for first-degree murder. At some point, a judge, Judge Lama, ends up dismissing the case. I believe it was with prejudice. I always get those confused. It's the one where you can actually try again.
That's
So
without
without
prejudice.
prejudice. So without prejudice. And so it was obvious that the district attorney's office was not happy about that dismissal without prejudice. And so what happened was there were some text messages that went from at least three prosecutors, two that worked for Linda Stanley and Linda Stanley, where they attempted to investigate the judge, Judge Lama, for some type of domestic violence involving an ex-wife. Judge Lama ends up leaving the bench, reports it to the regulatory agency that oversees, they call it Attorney Regulation Council. They oversee all attorneys here in Colorado. He files a complaint along with, I believe, the attorney that represented Barry Morphew, and it initiated an investigation. The investigation has now led to a hearing in which Miss Stanley could potentially lose her law license. And so currently, I think it either began yesterday or the day before, she is sitting before a panel where they are bringing in witnesses. I believe yesterday there was an attorney that you and I worked with, Mark, Jeff Lindsay, who used to be an El Paso County prosecutor. He ended up going to Canyon City, and I believe he's now in Pueblo. They interviewed him because he was involved in the Barry Morphew prosecution. And they also interviewed, excuse me, Mark Hurlburt. But they have a number of high flyers, as they can say, here in Colorado. I think they have John Southers also as a potential witness. I believe they have a former attorney general or some other prosecutors that are also going to be involved in testifying before this hearing. And, it's, from my perspective, Mark, I guess the way I look at this is, it's about time. Prosecutors are protected. They have absolute immunity. And, Stanley has made some huge mistakes here more recently. There was a murder case in Canyon City, I think, that was recently dismissed without prejudice as well. And the reasoning for that was, the judge happened to see that I guess Stanley had made some comments to the media about, this particular suspect was just doing something because he wanted to get laid. I think that's the way it was reported.
Right.
And, I will tell you, when you think of elected officials, and gosh, I've worked with a few elected officials over the years, and there's a certain standard, right? I mean, we're all here, and elected officials are kind of held at a much higher standard, where things like getting laid are not comments that you would expect to hear
From
from
your
an
district
elected
attorney.
official, right? I mean, the standard response, I've done a lot of media interviews. I mean, the way you respond to any kind of allegation is simply that there is a presumption of innocence, right? That the person who's been arrested, that there was probable cause to make the arrest. However, he is presumed innocent until proven guilty, in front of a judge or a jury. And so, what we know is that, there was these statements made and they were unprofessional. And, even to take it even to the next extreme, Mark, which to me just kind of goes to the level of arrogance amongst some of these prosecutors who were involved in these text messages. I believe there was, I think Hurlburt was also involved in these text messages and one other prosecutor. But for them to, openly admit on a text message that they wanted to go after a sitting judge, is,
Well, to give a little more reflection on that, just to kind of lay it out. So this is on the Morphew case. This is the judge. He's not giving them favorable rulings. So the
In
prosecution,
the, in their eyes, right? In their eyes.
right. So you have the prosecution, and I will tell you from my experience, having worked as a detective, worked for prosecution, have worked for the defense, I have to tell you, from my experience, it appears judges tend to lean a little bit more towards the prosecution.
Oh,
And
yeah.
that may be just for whatever reason. But so here you have a judge that's not making rulings that the DAs like. So instead of saying, hey, maybe this is on us, maybe we need to change, maybe we need to do a better job to understand how we're supposed to be doing this better so we can not have these rulings against us. And a lot of these rulings were discovery violations because they weren't giving evidence to the defense, which is a requirement. So the judge was getting frustrated because the prosecution was not releasing evidence or copies or whatever in a timely fashion. They're getting all these rulings they don't like from the judge that's making them look bad because they're making these mistakes. So instead of trying to take it up a notch and say, guys, let's stop making mistakes. Instead, they start texting back and forth. What can we do to get rid of this judge? Well, let's investigate him. I heard that he had a domestic violence thing against his ex-wife. Let's go look into this, even though, maybe it's a year or two old, and see if maybe we can pressure him to, or whatever. I don't know what their flipping end game was, but doesn't that whole thing kind of sound unethical?
Absolutely, which is why the Attorney Regulation Council is involved. But to get back to that point of, that prosecutors are used to having favorable rulings, it's because it's specifically states that judges will rule in a favor in a light most favorable to the prosecution. But when you do a Rule 16 violation, which is right for our listeners. So when a case is presented, the prosecution has what's called discovery. That's the entire investigation. That's everything that that the government has put together that they then have to turn over to the defense. Well, they have to turn it over. This is not something that they can choose what they want to turn over and what they don't want to turn over. Things that may even incriminate somebody or maybe prove their innocence, no matter what, all of it has to be reported. And so this lack of reporting and this lack of disclosure is really what got them in trouble. And they know better, Mark. I mean,
Right,
you don't have,
exactly. They
we've been
know
in this
better.
line of work. We never, we had to preserve notes. We had to write reports, right? Everything gets to the other side. The other side gets to review everything. They get to question everything, right? They get to question us. They get to question our credibility. But, the prosecutors do not have a choice in what they can turn over and what they can't. And that is what has got her in the ethical dilemma that she's in. And that is, as an attorney, specifically as a prosecutor, why did you withhold not only this information, a Rule 16 violation, but more importantly, from an ethical standpoint, why are you going after a judge? I mean, you and I have been in front of a lot of judges. We don't like sometimes what they decide to do. We don't like the way they allow, maybe a defense attorney or a prosecutor to question us, and we're sitting there going, are you really going to allow this to happen? And they do, and we're not happy about it. But the last thing on your mind or my mind is maybe we should try and figure out something we can do to ruin this judge. And,
Right. I don't like this judge. Let's get him out of there.
that's right.
But, and I remember when you just said that, it brought back a memory. of one time I was on the stand here in El Paso County, and a prosecutor was cross-examining me, and he started asking me about my website. And
Right.
I'm kind of looking around, at the judge and stuff. I was like, "Hey, what has my website got to do with this case?" And nobody objected.
Right.
So I had to answer the questions
Right.
about my website. I
Right.
wasn't thrilled about it, but I didn't think, "Hey, I need to talk to the judge after the hearing." It is what it is. But the DA, they get this because they have absolute immunity. And I have to tell you, when you've been in law enforcement for a long time, especially as a district attorney, you start getting that I work for God syndrome, and you start thinking I can't do any wrong, and you don't ever question. You should always be questioning yourself, am I doing the right thing?
Right, because when you go to law school, they teach in the very
Ethics.
first year ethics, which is that if you're going to be a prosecutor, your role is not to win or lose. Your role is to seek justice.
Truth.
And what we're seeing, I mean, Mark, you and I unfortunately are seeing more and more of this more recently, excuse me, is that there's really become there has been this atmosphere in our criminal justice, in various jurisdictions throughout Colorado, where it's no longer about seeking justice, but it's more about how can we get a notch on our belt, that we
To
put
win.
another, yeah, exactly, that we won, right? That we put another perpetrator behind bars. And the unfortunate side of this is that, people don't, the prosecutors, I don't think they truly understand the effect that this has on an individual, right? When you have such a low barrier of probable cause, and as a police officer, you go out and you arrest somebody based on just probable cause, and you don't do a thorough investigation, and you make the arrest, and that person is arrested for whatever crime, and then you find out, oh, wait, there's some evidence to support that maybe they didn't commit that crime. What a prosecutor should do is immediately drop the charges and say, look, we need to reinvestigate this or investigate it more thoroughly because it's not right, because we have this evidence that suggests that this person may have not been there when the crime happened. I mean, Mark, we just you helped me with a case just a couple months ago. This guy was arrested in Colorado Springs for committing an armed robbery, and she was in New Mexico.
Right. She's in another state
She's
at the
in
time.
another state, and I'm sitting, I'm asking you, can you please review this, because it's not making any sense to me. And the police officer in the case even said there's indication that her device is in another state, but you know what, that's because of the way the payment is made. And I'm thinking to myself, what?
That's BS.
And
Nothing to do with
yeah,
it.
and here's the thing, the defense attorney brings it up to the prosecutor, and the prosecutor digs her heels into the ground and says, no, we are going to trial. And you know what happens? One day before trial, they decide to drop the charges. Well, what
And
nobody
you know,
doesn't see.
it's always right before the trial.
Oh,
And
yeah.
that's what just irritates the hell out of me, is that they have this evidence. We've provided it to them. And John and I have really, we've done a really a good job, I think, in the last 10 years, where our names have kind of become known in the state of Colorado, especially John, when it comes to reviewing cases for police procedures to make sure that they did their investigation correct. And then this is going to lead in. I'm going to tell a little story where this is going to lead into what you're talking about. I was on the stand again, just probably like half a year ago, 5, 6 months ago. And I presented during direct all this exculpatory information about the client, the defendant. And when the prosecutor came up to cross me, she goes, "Why are you waiting till now? Why did you wait till now, till trial? Why, if you knew there was exculpatory evidence, why didn't you just call me, and we could have discussed this, and I'm like, were you going to drop the charges? No. Why would I tell a prosecutor, hey, here's the weaknesses of your case that we're going to bring up at trial so they
Right.
can go fix it
Right.
or whatever? I mean, that's not how the judicial system works. And I know or knew they're not going to do the right thing. They're
Right.
not going to go in there with an open mind and say, "Hey, come on over to the office. Let's have a cup of coffee. Let's discuss the case. And if you can convince me, we'll drop the charges. That they're going to go and they're going to say, absolutely not. We're going to go to trial. And then the day before, they're like, yeah, this isn't going to work. And
Right.
then they decide to drop all the charges after putting this person through months of living under an indictment, most of them felony indictments. That's typically the only type of cases we work on. And they don't care. They don't care that it costs them thousands of dollars in
Tens of
attorney
thousands of
fees.
dollars.
Yeah, they don't care.
Right, right.
And that's the stuff that gets me is that a district attorney needs to be seeking the truth and justice. And they need to be in that mode of, hey, come on over. Let's have a cup of coffee and let's go through the evidence together and see what we can work out. But as a defense attorney, you're not going to sit there and play all your cards before trial.
Well,
I
and the
mean,
other part of that,
crazy.
Mark, is you know darn well, because it's happened to me. If you had gone forward and said, can we please sit down and go over why this is the way it is, that what you guys are saying is in fact not true, what they end up doing is they end up discrediting you as the
Yes,
expert,
all.
right? They make every attempt to make you, Mark Poff, the person that doesn't know what they're talking about. And in fact, you didn't do this or you didn't do that, or you made an error in this or you made an error in that. So they go through and they try to just hammer you on the stand to say this person's not credible. So why would we sit down and tell them that they've made a mistake and that they have the wrong person when all they're going to do is attack us when we get on the stand? And that's happened. I mean,
Oh, I saw it
the
happen to
Chase
you up in
matter.
Weld County
Yeah, and it happened at the
DA.
Chase matter.
Yeah,
Yeah,
I mean, where
Weld
they bring
County.
up stuff and it's like, what does that have to do with this case? It's like
Right.
the attorney bringing up my website,
Right,
and
exactly.
stuff like that. It's like, obviously you're going after my credibility. Why don't we just talk about the facts of the case? Why don't you talk to me about technology? I want to talk about cellular technology. Because I think I know 100 times more than that attorney does. And I just worked on a case today. Can't obviously give specifics, unfortunately, but this is a great going to be a great case to talk about in a year from now. And they wrote a report, the cop or the investigator working for the DA's office wrote a report that basically was a putting together everything that incriminated the defendant. And then when I go through all this evidence or I go through all these records, cell phone records and other stuff, it's like all the stuff that is clearly exculpatory is not in their report.
Right.
That's not fair. That's not what law enforcement should be doing. Law
Right.
enforcement should be saying, here's the facts of the evidence from the cellular technology, from the cell phone records. Here's it laying out. Here's what kind of shows some guilt. And here's some things that maybe show that, this person's innocent. And you be the judge, jury, or whomever the reader is. That's not what they're doing. They're writing a report to basically gather as much information to incriminate the defendant. And that's not
And
how it
this
should.
exactly, and this is why, right? If you ask me my opinion, prosecutors, elected prosecutor, a DA should not be elected. I think we need to get away from that whole political affiliation, and more importantly, right, we need to hold them accountable. Could you imagine if these attorneys that, no different than a doctor, an engineer, all the
Right.
other professions where we have accountability, you build a big bridge wrong and somebody gets hurt, you're going to get
Cut
sued.
off the wrong
You cut off,
leg.
exactly, you're going to get sued, right?
They're going to
If you
get sued, but a
slip and fall,
DA has absolute immunity like God. And they can absolutely, I mean, even say in a deposition, I knew when we arrested that person, they weren't guilty. And you still can't do anything to them.
Could you
I knew
imagine,
they weren't
right, how much
guilty.
better the work quality would be? Because you'd have attorney, prosecutors going, my butt is not going to be on the line for this. We need to do a better job. And before we go out and do this, let's make sure that we're making, taking the right steps. Because, and please understand, right? Because I think a lot of people look at you and me, Mark, maybe more so me, that, we're these strong advocates for the accused, and it's the furthest thing from the truth. What we're strong advocates for is the truth, right? And so we're about accountability. And so if there's any evidence to support somebody's innocence, No different than anybody else whose loved one or themselves have been in trouble. You would want somebody to be able to verbalize that and tell, your jury, hey, they made a
To advocate.
mistake. That's right, because here's what, what people don't understand is criminal cases and civil lawsuits, you don't put them into a computer and spit out some result. These are all done by humans, and inherently humans, what? We make mistakes. But these mistakes that are at a level where people's lives, right, where they lose, large amounts of money and they lose their credibility and their role within a community, they're, where they're just literally, I mean, take an example, right? Can you imagine being you or I being charged with like sex assault on a child? There doesn't have to be a trial. We've already been convicted,
You
especially
don't need
in our
evidence.
community. But
All you
I
need is an
just
allegation. You don't
all
need
you need is an
evidence.
allegation. And that's the scary part of the whole thing. It doesn't matter if it's true. It's that if you said, hey, Mark Poff, if you said, hey, Chuck was involved in sexually assaulting his kid, it's the furthest thing
You're
from the
done.
truth, but he's done.
Yeah,
It'll be all over
exactly.
the news, and he would have already been convicted in the court of public opinion. Not with any ounce of evidence to support it.
Well, and here's one more thing that they should implement is if a DA drops the charges on someone, they need to flip the lawyer bill, so it's out of their budget. So they have this budget for a drop charges, so, because I mean, Sandra, I'm looking at the messages. I don't think John actually looks at the chat part, but I'm definitely looking at it. And Sandra, you're 100% right. DAs don't care because it's not their money.
That's right.
It's people's money. But
That's
if
right.
every time, let's say they had so much of a budget, and every time they got it wrong, they had to pay their attorney fees, all of a sudden now,
The public would be asking, could you imagine that? In Colorado Springs, if Michael Allen had like a 25, 30% fail rate on cases, and they were paying out millions of dollars in attorney's fees, could you imagine what the community would be saying? What the heck is going on at the district attorney's office that we're having to pay out all this money for cases where people are making huge mistakes?
I mean, it's just amazing to me. I mean, because we've seen it working for the defense now. We've been in business for almost, it'll be 10 years in October. I mean, John and I have known each other for over 20 years. We've been in private, if you want to call it private business or whatever, for almost 10 years. We're both swamped. I mean, we're now having to pick and choose what cases we take. We never had to do that a few years ago. We took every case that came our way. And some, I mean, it's just like, this is just so wrong.
And
You know,
the reality of it, Mark, if you look at what you and I have been doing, if the person is guilty of the crime, guess what? There's not anything you or I are going to be able to say or do that's going to change the outcome of that case. But boy,
Well, we might get a better outcome.
I mean, I guess the way I look
I
at
mean,
it is if there's evidence to support the allegation, right, they're either going to take a plea or they may end up, going to trial and being convicted. What I'm getting at, where what about all of those people that we have helped more recently that have not been involved in a crime? There was evidence to support that they didn't commit the crime, and it was completely ignored by the district attorney's office or a local law enforcement agency. And
when
then
the
all of a
facts were
sudden,
presented to them.
facts were presented, right? There's, look, if it's facts, you and I, when we testify, the testimony would be no different for the prosecution or the defense because we don't take sides. It's what do the facts indicate? And if the facts indicate that the person is guilty, guess what happens? You and I never testify.
We never testify.
We
That is
never
correct.
testify.
I
But
mean,
if the
there's no
guy
reason.
is innocent, we get asked, can you please testify
And
on their
you know what
behalf?
they normally say? I mean, to me, they said, Mark, we need you to explain it to the judge and the jury how this works and why what the state is saying. And this is the thing that definitely bothers me about cellular technology, which is really my wheelhouse, is the government will use statements like consistent with being at the homicide and statements like that. And so they're using cell phone records, which are not precise. They're not absolute in the location of the mobile device, the cell phone. And you've got law enforcement officers willing to get on the stand and say, I looked at the cell phone records and it shows them in the area of the homicide. And it's like, oh my gosh, I can't believe you just said that.
Right.
And then we need to go in and explain it to a jury to look, it's not like that. Let me explain to you how cell towers work. I'm actually an expert. I'm not a cop that went to a 40-hour class on how to plot records. This is how it works. And again, like you said, it really doesn't matter whether we work for the defense or for the prosecution. We're talking about technology stuff. Now you get more into police procedures. I do a little bit as a retired detective, especially when it comes to digital evidence. How did you collect that evidence and things like that? But
Right.
one of the things that really gets me, and we need to start wrapping this up,
Okay.
it's if a local district attorney, this Linda Stanlin, is willing to target a current judge sitting on the
Sitting in,
bench,
right.
well, how do you think they would feel about targeting an individual? It
Exactly.
wouldn't, they wouldn't lose one wink of sleep knowing that they're totally screwing your entire life. You're not guilty. They know you're not guilty, but they want to make a point for whether political reason or their buddy doesn't like you
Yep.
or whatever, knowing that there's absolutely nothing that anybody can do other than this regulatory. So I personally hope
Applaud them. Yep.
that
Yep.
justice is served in this regulatory, commission or whatever they're doing. I wish there was a better, like the state Supreme Court, where you could make appeals to them and say, hey, look at this DA.
Right.
Look what they're doing. And I think we need to end this on a high note, which is most district attorneys, I say most, I don't know for sure, their hearts are in the right place. The problem is they're elected officials, which means they're politicians. And they have political motivation, which is a problem. But every person on this planet has some form of bias. And I have to tell you, I tried hard as a detective to make sure that my biases were in check if I had any.
That's right.
I don't like rednecks or whatever. Actually, I love rednecks, but whatever it is, that you keep that in check and you're always asking yourself, am I doing the right thing?
That's right.
Am I doing everything right? And district attorneys need to do this, and they need to learn to walk away. When you have like DAs, and I know you don't want to talk about Manhattan. I mean, if you ever were to say, if you elect me, I will go after Hickenlooper.
That's just
I don't like Hickenlooper. Hickenlooper, I don't,
right.
you elect me as the attorney general, and I'm going to find something that Hickenlooper did. People would be outraged. But
Right.
yet,
As and they should be. And
and
they
they
should be
should
outraged.
be, because
Right.
that's not the way the system should work. There is a reason that Lady Justice or Lady Liberty or whatever is blindfolded. That's how it's supposed to work. So I hope everybody was entertained. That's all we try to do. We're not trying to be political pundits. Definitely not John.
Definitely not
He
me.
wants nothing to do with politics. I'm always interested. I'm
Yeah,
definitely going to watch the debate. Between Biden and Trump, to see which one nods off. I'm pretty sure it's going to be Biden. He even wanted to sit down because he couldn't stand for 90 minutes. I love it. But John, thanks again.
welcome. Thanks for having
Maybe the
me.
next month or two, we'll come back and do this again. Chuck and
Awesome.
Julie will be back on Friday. Anything else you'd like to say, John, before we wrap it up?
Hey, thanks for having me. Appreciate it again, Mark.
Absolutely. Everybody have a great hump day, and then hopefully you'll have a great weekend coming up and a great 4th of July. Talk to you later.
Thank you.